Well, it's the intersection of crime and politics. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. You think you know about Soapy Smith? He was just a con man, right? He got caught and killed, right? Or maybe it's not quite that simple. Our number is 1-800-478-8255. Toll free, that's 478-TALK. And Anchorage, a local call of 550-8422. Email talk@aprn.org. At a time when our state legislators are being marched off to prison, what can we learn from Soapy Smith on Talk of Alaska statewide?
Today's program is underwritten in part by BP. Giving back to the community is a priority because so many at BP call Alaska home.
The Ballad of Soapy Smith is, it debuted in Seattle some time ago and is now coming to Cyrano's Playhouse in Anchorage, complete with a reenactment of the death of Soapy Smith during For Rendezvous. Looks like enough to make a radio show out of. So that's what we did. We've got the playwright with us by telephone, Michael Weller, author of Ballad of Soapy Smith, by telephone from Madison, Wisconsin, where he's doing a fellowship in writing right now. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Michael.
Why, thanks very much.
And sitting across from me at the desk is the actor who plays Soapy in the production at Cyrano's, Eric Hayden. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Eric.
Thank you, Steve.
So, Eric, I was discussing this with Sandy, the dramaturgy of this, and she said that your take on Soapy was basically a con man who buys his own BS. Did you say that's about right?
I mean, that's basically the direction that the play takes, and I have to follow what Michael's given me for the play, and it is really true to life in many aspects of it, and I think Michael enhances the better part of what's best in us in life, and gives Soapy that life in his play, and makes it it's a very fascinating story, and because of it, so.
Well, here is this guy. He has gone from basically boomtown to boomtown, and it's as if he finally perfects it when he gets to Skagway. You know, he's kind of finally got he's got his con so polished that he becomes part of the business establishment. Wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah. Also, they didn't have any law up there yet. I mean, everywhere else, like Leadville and Creed that he'd been working, there were established marshals and so on. So sooner or later, he'd bump up against the law. But, Alaska at that time was a kind of equivocal place legally. It was the Canadian Mounties weren't quite in charge, and they didn't have American law enforcement arriving up there yet. So how law was actually enforced was a little up for grabs.
Michael, I think I should tell our audience that you wrote the screenplay for Ragtime, and clearly you've got a feeling for historical drama and kind of how culture evolved in this country and also the folk life of it all. Were you fascinated to get the commission to write this play for Seattle?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was a gas. I mean, Dan Sullivan was the artistic director, and he wanted a new play for this playhouse that they were going to build. And he told me this almost a year and a half before they even broke ground. And he didn't want to start out with a revival of a classic. He said he wanted something new. And would I be interested? And I said, would I ever? So I pitched him this idea. I'd seen a picture of Soapy Smith, that sort of death picture. It's a pretty famous one. In a book of, like, you know, one of those colorful characters of the West type books. And there was something about his story that I don't know what it is that stood out for me. So I, researched to see whether anybody had written about him before. And there was a movie with Edward G. Robinson in it that had him in it. But there was nobody had grabbed a hold of a story like this, which is really the same story as Bernie Madoff. You know, somebody who starts to believe that he's for real. And I'm sure. I mean, I don't think he went through the day every minute going, I'm conning these people, I'm conning these people. You start to hang out with enough, rich, well-heeled people that think well of you, and you fool yourself, you know. So it's a classic American story, and if you get away with it, then you become a famous man, and everybody celebrates your great enterprise. But if you don't, you're a criminal, because that's what you really are anyway.
And it kind of plays out in the way that he dies, don't you think? I mean, in a sense.
Yeah, totally. I mean, his whole... Well, Eric, you can explain the side of it, but there's one guy who won't fall for him, and that becomes his, like, nemesis.
Right, yeah. Frank Reed, who is also a true historical figure, and from the town of Skagway's perspective, is actually revered as a hero for killing Soapy Smith, but he also died in the process. He's the one guy who Soapy, you know, in order to try and become this new man, tries to befriend and have him become his lead into this new world. And, you know, it's that process that is one of the most interesting parts of the play, is seeing how he tries to get him to become his friend and how that happens or how it doesn't happen. And
yeah, basically what goes on with the way that he's able to join the establishment there in Skagway is as you said, Michael, because it's sort of lawless. And so he can actually kind of make it a more orderly place, you know, by having his own police.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, essentially that's what did happen, is in place of law, he kind of became the law. That's why they called him the King of Skagway, or the uncrowned King of Skagway in lots of circles, was because the law basically ran through him and his group. And because of it, it became actually a much safer town, and it became a reasonably well law-ordered town. It's just his idea of what the law should be was different from what, you know, perfected society's idea of what law should be.
Well, we didn't exactly have perfected society.
Well, idealistic people, I guess you could say, but who believed that all kinds of these different forms of gambling and, you know, lower-order forms of crimes should be omitted, too. He didn't so much think that. He thought that you know, yes, violent crimes and everything else like that should be eliminated, but if a person was foolish enough to get suckered by someone, that's their own fault, and it shouldn't be a crime because of it.
Oh, come on now. I mean, yeah, you know, he's the guy that developed the reason he was called Soapy is mm-hmm. because, you know, he would set up this
tripe and keister. Yep.
and wrap up bars of soap in money and then wrap them up in brown paper and then sort of a little sleight of hand operating there, and people thought they were going to find big money inside mm-hmm. of these wrappers, and of course they didn't.
Right.
right.
And this is also, how could he possibly get away with saying he was sending telegrams when the wires didn't even get out of his office?
Well, they got to the edge of town, apparently. You know? and then the wires just sort of went into the ground.
Yeah.
You know. So, but listen, it sounds funny, but if he'd have hung on and mm-hmm. his men hadn't ambushed that prospector coming back in through the pass, I think the Chilkoot Pass or something, he may have been around when the law reached Skagway, and he did have connections in Washington. His cousin Bobo Smith was a reporter mm-hmm. In Washington, and he knew senators, and he'd been to Washington just before, the year before. It's very likely that he could have been commissioned as an officer up there, and then he would just be a normal, corrupt peace officer.
That's true. And in fact, somewhere I read that he had actually been offered a position by Governor Brady just after the whole 4th of July parade, and that he didn't take that particular position, and that basically could have, you know, gotten him the in that he needed and to where he could have turned everything around at that time. But he thought he could have done more and gotten a better position, so he had turned that one down.
And did your research say that Brady came to him for that?
All I saw was that it basically said that during the time that he was there and he was at the parade that he had offered him that position at that time. So
I see. Because yeah. My memory, this is a long time ago now, but my memory was that he had approached Brady and that was just pending. And then he mm-hmm. had himself elected the Grand Marshal of the 4th of July parade to attract the attention of people who might be watching. Mm-hmm. And that they would turn this false gold into true gold, and he'd have power.
Okay, let's start with the calls here. Clay joins us from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Clay.
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good.
Hey, I was remembering that back in, you probably know these people too, but Jim Richards' show in Skagway, the Soapy Smith Show, was written by a gal named Holly or Lolly back in Juneau in the early 70s, and Tom Biss played Soapy Smith back then.
And I think it's still going.
Yeah, a bunch of us got together and formed an Eagles Lodge so that they could open up the the old Eagles Hall up there and run the show in the Eagles Hall up in Skagway. But boy, that show's been going on a long time. There's a lot of money in these scalawags.
Wait, do you know if was that show called The Ballad of Soapy Smith?
You know, I can't remember the original name. I remember the gal in Juneau, though, who actually wrote it. And do you guys remember Tom Biss, who was the first Soapy Smith in Skagway?
No way.
Anyway, Tom turned out to be a scalawag. Anyway, he worked for the legislature and needs to say no more.
Oh, wow.
He took the role on for real.
Okay. I think we've got a lot of future Soapy Smith plays here in Alaska right now, you know? I mean, there's a lot of room for some melodrama writing with what's been going on the past few years.
It challenges the imagination. You know, it almost outdoes anything you could possibly imagine.
Oh, Soapy couldn't have come close to what these guys were doing, but his dreams were bigger, I will say that, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, hey, Clay, thanks for your call. We actually got Skagway on the line right now, so we'll pick up on that with Buckwheat Donahue. Hello, Buckwheat.
Hey, good morning.
How are you feeling today?
Well, I'm doing all right. It's snowing, and we have about 6 inches of new snow on the ground, and hey, life goes on.
Well, Buckley, you are, I understand, the tourism director now in the town of Skagway, and you also are involved with the Liarsville Tent City thing?
Well, for years, for over 10 years, I was involved with Liarsville. I was also in the Days 98 show. In fact, I used to have a shootout with Soapy 4 or 5 times a day. And, so, yeah, I killed him a bunch of times.
Well, yeah. So, tell me how this is played there in your town of Skagway. I mean, clearly this is a town that's in a national park. It subsists fundamentally off of the tourist business. Mostly the cruise ship people come through there. And there is this place serious? Is this sort of like, you know, a tourist melodrama? What is it?
Well, you know what? Soapy probably gets, he's one of the main reasons people still come up here. Well, you could ask anybody that's getting ready to leave on a cruise ship after they spent the day in town, and most of them would say, hey, do you know anything about Soapy? They go, oh, yeah, con man, not a very nice person, and stuff like that. And, I mean, he is so much a part of our culture still today. And people are still making a lot of money off of him too, and it's just part of Skagway's colorful past, if you will. But nobody's forgotten him, and some people think that he is the hero of Skagway, and not the guy that shot him, Frank Reed.
You got to be kidding.
No, I'm not, because, see, there's some question as to Frank Reed's character, because several weeks or several months after Soapy met his end on July 8th in 1898, word reached Skagway that people in Baker City, Oregon wanted to talk to him in connection with a murder down there, that may have been the reason that Frank Reed left Oregon and came to Skagway. So and those guys didn't like each other from the very beginning. So it's just one of those things, right? You know, it's a controversy that's never going to be completely resolved.
Well, in my reading of it, Soapy essentially didn't really have to do this. The thing that he got killed on was essentially some kind of labor dispute that he went down.
No, he was trying to get into a meeting that was being held against him. The town was rallying against a gang member of his who had robbed a guy coming out of the gold fields on his way back to through Skagway, and they jumped him. And Soapy had said nobody's supposed to do any damage over this winter until the spring thaw, because then they'll all be coming through, and we can fleece a little bit of from each one of them. But instead, they went out and they tried to rob this guy, and I think they succeeded in robbing him and hurting him. And then the town, suddenly there was a brush fire, you know, that just grew up against Soapy, and they started meeting in all of these different places, and finally they met in a warehouse at the end of this wharf, I gather. and there were guards around it, and Frank Reed was one of the guards. And so Soapy approached him just so that he could go and speak to the crowd, because he was a great orator, apparently. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't let him in because they were afraid that if he did get a chance to speak to everybody, he'd sway their sympathies. And so Frank sort of stood his ground, and Soapy and the two of them stood in the middle of this sort of causeway that went out to the warehouse, and they shot each other there.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's true. Very well said. Very well said. The prospector that they messed with, that they shouldn't have, it was J.D. Stewart was
that's
his
right.
name. And then and it was on in those days Skagway had several wharfs, and it was the Juno Wharf, what they call the Juno Wharf, where that warehouse was at the end of it. And and Frank Reed was one of three guys that were, they were just like, you know, just standing there, like he said, keeping them out of the meeting. And Soapy, who had had a few drinks, went there and wanted to get past him. And I guess the last words exchanged between the two was Soapy going, good God, Reed, don't shoot, right? And then they both discharged their weapons and Soapy died.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the way I'd envisioned it, it's true that Frank Reed had. There are some reports that Frank Reed was a kind of a heavyweight and a doer, you know, person. But the way I thought it would be more effective is if he was just one of those really stolid guys who's amused by Soapy Smith and not frightened by him, kind of knows he's going to do himself in sooner or later anyway, and he simply won't take Soapy Smith seriously. Because I thought that would be a much more interesting enemy to have than somebody who's implacably out, you know, to put your light out.
Yeah.
You know, it's frustrating when Soapy wants to be taken seriously, and this guy just finds him amusing.
Yeah, and Erica, who is it that plays Frank Reed in the production?
Eric Culver.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So are you guys having a good time working it out together?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is. It is a very interesting battle between the two of us, because just like he said, there's something implacably harder about fighting someone who is a good person and in some level is wanting to understand and listen to your point of view, because there is an amount of truth to it. But on the other hand, he like knows you as a BS artist.
Well,
I pulled off on that one real quick. We're on the air. Be careful now, Eric. and he knows him as a guy who, you know, has been a confidence man. So there's that part of him that's always a bit leery of him and is, you know, always on his guard. And so he doesn't believe him for the majority of things. And yeah, that's always a tough thing to play against. And yeah, it can get very frustrating because you're like, I'm giving you my heart here, guy, and you're like, just keep putting up these walls, and I'm like, why don't you listen to me?
Yeah. So yeah, Michael, right. Michael, you're playing. You've been invited to come up here to see this production and talk with the cast. Are you looking forward to that?
Oh yeah, big time. And there's a fellow here, a poet, who's from Alaska. Jill, and I told her the other day I was coming up, and she got this look on her face like, mm-hmm. oh, God, you know, she just would do anything to get to Alaska. You know, you could see mm-hmm. it's like this mystical thing came over her. she loves the state. Mm-hmm. So I'm that just made me look forward to it even more.
Well, good. I hope you have a good time here, and I hope I know you won't have enough time. I can tell that right away. Okay.
Yeah, who plays the poet McAleer in it?
Oh, Paul McAleer is a name I'm buzzing right now, unfortunately. Whoops. Sorry, Patrick. Patrick Halloran.
All right.
It came right back to me.
Okay, all right, great.
Patrick Halloran, huh? Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
So it's good to see the Halloran's are continuing to...
Mm-hmm.
To put their creative juices
out
there.
Yes, both him and his sister are actors. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very good. Very good.
Well, let's we've been joined now by telephone, and I didn't plan this, but I have a hunch that Sandy did, by Jeff Smith, who is a descendant of Soapy Smith.
All right.
Lives in California. And Jeff, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Jeff.
Hello, Jeff. This is Buckwheat.
Hey, Buck, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Good to hear your voice again.
I am very insulted that you people would talk about my relative that way. He was a nice, honest businessman. No, I'm just kidding you. I've been writing a biography that's about to come out. I've been working on it for about 24 years. And so I'm very well aware that Soapy was not a good guy, but I've been listening to some of the information, and I have some little wrenches to throw in there. For instance, Frank Reed actually worked as a bartender for Soapy in the very earliest days of Skagway. So they did know each other very well. And in actuality, Frank Reed did not kill Soapy.
What?
It was one of the other guards.
Oh, this is getting to be like the
Kennedy assassination,
like the end of the road thing out there.
And that's the interesting thing about history a lot is that certain things can get omitted like that, and then everybody gloms onto one story, and you never hear about this.
Yeah, well, no, you know, anybody could make up a story like this, you know, mysteries, Billy the Kid, etc. But there are actual written letters and notes from Tanner, Cy Tanner, who was one of the four guards on the dock, and other people who witnessed the gunfight, that actually another guard named Jesse Murphy had picked up Soapy's own rifle and shot Soapy in the heart. And as Buckwheat said, Soapy's last words were, "My God, don't shoot." He wasn't saying it to Reed. He was saying it to Murphy. But this will all come out in my book.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great, Jeff. And I understand you're thinking about making a trip up here for this, too?
Yes, I'm looking forward. I met Michael a number of years ago at the first Ballad of Soapy Smith that I saw, which was being performed at the small college. And I am very much looking forward to coming up to Anchorage, also because of I like to go to places where Soapy was. And right across the way there, at Hope, is where Soapy landed for the first time in 1896.
Well, I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
Few people do. I have personal letters that Soapy wrote to his wife, and one of them are from that era.
Wow. Yeah, well, of course, Hope was, you know, more of a town. There wasn't even a town in Anchorage at the time.
No, he didn't stay long there. You know, that was a year before Skagway was founded.
Well, they're still looking for the gold around Hope, you know.
are you going to have any copies of your book with you, Jeff?
No, it is not published yet. Yeah. It's supposed to come out. In fact, the company is up there in Alaska. Klondike Research is the one who's publishing it, and he's a great publisher, and I'm very lucky to have him.
Klondike Great. Research. Well, we'll look forward to that, Jeff, and maybe we can. It'll be an excuse for another discussion of this fascinating historical figure and historical era. Michael Weller, I want to turn back to you because are you still working with the history in terms of what you write?
Well, if the project calls for it, I haven't been asked recently to do that. But if I am, then I start to research and try to get a sound for the way people talk and, you know, do my job. But right at the moment, I don't have any projects that are historically based. In fact, the irony of your saying I'm immersed in history is that generally I'm identified as being very much a writer about my own generation and contemporary issues. So the two things you mentioned, which were Ragtime and Soapy Smith, were, you know, a little off the beaten track for me.
Yeah, but I mean, whoa, what a job. I mean, Ragtime is one of your all-time great classics. I mean, Cagney, did you know you were writing for Cagney at the time?
Well, sort of. We got to know Cagney quite well because he lived in a farm near the director whose farm I worked on. You know, we worked together on the script. So I knew that Miloš Forman had in mind to get Cagney to be in the film because he adored Cagney, and Cagney had left film forever, you know, for 20 years or so, and he would go over, we'd all have lunch at his place and tell stories and anecdotes, and we'd be driving away and Miloš would say, "I think he's interested, I think we can get him," you know, you'd hear like this kind of thing. And finally he started to put it out there that he'd like him to play this role, and Cagney said, "Absolutely not." And Forman was pretty, you know, abject about that. He said, "Now this is the role I want to play." And he pointed to another one, and that was even better, you know. So
wow.
that's
Now we got him.
So they must have been, working with Foreman must have been interesting. It sounds like it was a kind of a drawn-out process to get the
screenplay. Well, he's a very careful and very committed filmmaker. He doesn't do anything unless he feels some reason deep in his heart that the film has to be made. He's not a lighthearted guy who comes in and gets the job done for pay and then disappears. He's a real deep-feeling, deep-thinking filmmaker.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at something like Amadeus, and it essentially changed the way all of us look at Mozart. I mean, you can't see that film without totally changing your view of it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know, whether
it was a stage play first, too.
Yeah, whether it's true or not has really little to do with it. I think we get that in that area with Soapy Smith as well. You know, Jeff Smith, sure. with all due courtesy, the story probably has already taken off. So it'll really make your book more interesting because it'll be a different story than what we've already got in our heads.
Yes.
Right.
Buckwheat, how realistic do you think the current Soapy Smith play is that they still do, I understand, at the Moose Lodge there in Skagway?
Well, at the Eagles, actually,
Eagles,
where it's held now. And, it's fairly accurate. It's fairly accurate. Jeff is going to have to come back up and talk to Jim Richards. That's the guy who produces the play and puts it on every year for the last 30 years. And let him know that Frank is the wrong guy to be shooting Soapy. But I think it portrays it fairly accurately. I mean, you know, there's always a little bit of poetic license thrown in, but the major facts, I think, are accurate. And there's one thing I'd like to ask Jeff. Jeff, are you going to put anything in there about the old traditions of the Soapy Smith wake that we have up here in Skagway every year?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, let me illuminate everybody just a little bit. Jeff has been, he's a benevolent character, and he used to send up a couple $100 every year to a guy named Jeff Brady that runs a newspaper here in town, and we'd go out and buy a bunch of beer and stuff, and all the fans of Soapy Smith would go out to the graveyard on July 8th and toast him and just say some odd things about Frank and the demise of Soapy and stuff like that. And if he puts any of the stuff in his book, it'll be highly entertaining as well.
And it's probably a book on its own.
Yes, I think so. And Jeff,
I'm trying to picture, like, 4th of July is, of course, a huge holiday all over Alaska. And it's easy to understand why, just because of the daylight stuff and all that. It's not necessarily associated that much with patriotism, but, hey, it's the height of summer and the 4th of July, and there's going to be, I mean, you can say there are fireworks, but, I mean, what's the point with fireworks when you have daylight almost 24 hours? It's sort of beside the point. So maybe the beer is a little bit closer to to the Alaskan notion. And then you get 4 days later, you get to July 8th, Soapy Smith Day. And you guys go out and celebrate again.
Well, sure. Well, you know, I mean, there's a motto, I think, everywhere, you know, anything for a party. And also, you know, this guy, Jim Richards, that plays Soapy up here, he's a spitting image of the guy. And on the 4th of July in 1898, Soapy Smith was actually the leader, the master of ceremonies of the parade. And there were thousands and thousands of people. And Jefferson Randolph Smith II was sort of like an icon, at least on that day. And for everything to turn around in just 4 short days, that's an amazing story right there.
It really is, and I'll bet you it's amazingly put forth in that play, the ballad of Soapy Smith, those 4 days. But before we go back to the play, we got to take a break as Talk of Alaska continues.
It comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. Miss our newscast today? Listen to APRN's Alaska Morning News, Economic Report, and News Nightly on the web at aprn.org.
Soapy Smith is the subject today on Talk of Alaska, and we got all sorts of people. I don't know if you call them experts or they're just people involved with the Soapy Smith saga. Among them is the author of the play, The Ballad of Soapy Smith, which is about to be performed in Anchorage, originally written for a group in Seattle, Michael Weller. And before the break, we were talking about the 4th of July parade that, of course, basically preceded Soapy's death by just a few days.
Right.
Do you depict that in the play? Is that part of the dynamics to show him riding really high and then being brought down or tripped up?
It's dealt with that he was Grand Marshal and he believed that he was, you know, at the height of his powers. That's indicated, yeah. I mean, you can't have a parade on stage, so not unless you have a big budget. So that's not in the play, but it's referred to. Yeah.
Yeah, and what was the? That's you've already said that like you found significance in the character of Frank Reed. Maybe you could talk a little bit more about what you put into this play. The pieces you wanted to get in there that seemed to make it a play?
Well, it's the conflict between, the slowly growing conflict between Jeff Smith and Frank Reed, and then the town merchants who were as corrupt as anything that Frank Reed was, but they had a kind of, self-importance about them. And they formed a sort of vigilante committee almost to protect their businesses against the businesses that Soapy brought in and fronted with his gang. So it was really, a group of two, two groups of merchants, one that was overtly corrupt and one that was covertly trying to form a cartel to push Soapy Smith's business out of here, that joined forces that came to blows. And probably those merchants had a great deal to do with fomenting the meetings that were happening on Juneau Wharf and so on.
Yeah, so it's really kind of like an old Western. I mean, it is a Western, I guess, really.
Yeah, with the value sort of turned upside down. In fact, there was talk for a while of Miloš Forman, who we spoke about earlier, was very, very interested in this story and had a meeting between and wanted to do it as a movie musical starring Garth Brooks and Sophie Smith.
Oh,
and we met with Elton John and sat there and talked about possible musical numbers and so on. And it all fizzled, the whole thing. But that, it was absolutely a classical classical Western musical that they wanted to write, basically.
Mm-hmm. We have a fascinating piece of email here, and you're probably already acquainted with this Jeff Smith. I didn't really realize until he said it that Jeff Smith is, you're probably also Jefferson Smith, right?
No.
No.
No, no. There were too many Jefferson Smiths in our family. It was getting very hard to tell us alike.
Well, this is the account as put forth by Bobby Sheldon, who was the postmaster. You're probably acquainted with this, Jeff?
I'm not sure if he was the postmaster, but I think he was just a young boy reporter. Yeah, I met Bobby Sheldon in 1974, 73, so I am familiar.
Yeah. On the night of July 8th, Sheldon witnessed the shootout between Surveyor Frank Reed and the notorious outlaw Soapy Smith. Reed grabbed the muzzle of Smith's rifle, he said. Smith jerked and jerked and finally got the muzzle pointed around enough to try to hit him in the middle, and he pulled the trigger. That was the first shot. Then Reed fell to his knees and hung onto the rifle. Reed was big enough to prevent Soapy from shooting again. Reed finally got his revolver out of his pocket. He fired three shots. The third shot went right through Soapy's heart. His hat went one way. His rifle went the other way. Reed was rushed to a doctor for treatment, but died a hero 10 days later. So that's how Sheldon put it.
Well, actually, when the National Park Service interviewed him years later, he changed his story.
So, wow.
He was actually a very young boy, and he admitted that he had been knocked down when the gunfight first started. He was inside of a store, I believe. So, you can't read everything. You can't believe everything you read.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely not, especially from that era. You know, you even read the contemporary newspaper accounts, and it it's, you know, like they would never do journalism like that today.
Don't bet on it.
At least not very much.
I have to admit that I dropped that line out there to see who would grab it. Buckwheat, so you have told us, I think, that Soapy Smith is probably central to the tourist business there in
sure
your town.
Sure he is. No, he's going to be famous until all of us stop breathing, he's going to be famous forever, and it is fun talking about him, right? Because he's part of our gold rush culture, actually, just being the jumping off point. Because Soapy was very good at fleecing people, right? I mean, if he did all this down in Denver, Colorado, and Creed, Colorado, and I don't know. I think he got his start in this in the underworld, kind of down in Texas. Mm-hmm. Is that true, Jeff? Is that where he started out?
That is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was very powerful in both Denver and Creed, and the times are finally starting to catch up with him when he moved up to Skagway.
Yeah, he left Denver, went to Creed, and then went back to Denver and set up another operation.
Right, yeah. I grew up in Colorado, and in my ninth grade history class in Colorado, there was a chapter on Soapy, mm-hmm. right? And so there's a lot, I don't think it's in business anymore, but we used to go and party in lower downtown at Soapy Smith's Parlor. And, and he started the Tivoli Beer Company, I don't know if it was a brewery or not, but there was a beer in Denver in those days called Tivoli, and Soapy was involved with something called Tivoli down there.
Yeah, he had a gambling hall called the Tivoli Club.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay, thanks, Jeff. But I'm as part of my job being tourism director is promoting the history of Skagway, and probably 80% of the time in most of my correspondence I always reference Soapy Smith, and because it's a great segue for fun conversation and things like that. Soapy is he's going to be with us for a long time, and you ask who killed him, nobody remembers, right? That's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm. And the guy that claimed to remember it now admits he wasn't even there.
Yeah.
Oh, you gotta love it. Well, Buckwheat, I want to thank you so much for being with us on the program from Skagway to give us a little ground truth in on this high-flying tale of Soapy Smith.
Okay. All right. See you guys. Thank you.
All right. Buckwheat Donahue, tourism director, town of Skagway. Well, Jeff Smith, what do you do besides write a book for 20-odd years?
That's about it. All I do is write. I'm an author. I live in California, and I do know that you up there in Alaska are having a lot of problems with your politicians. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have that kind of a problem down here, of course. But there's a saying that I enjoy that Soapy once said to a newspaper reporter, and I thought you might appreciate it. He said it in 1896, "I consider bunco steering more honorable than the life led by the average politician."
Whoa. Well, Eric Hayden, Dick Reichman is certainly a politically aware person, and he's directing mm-hmm. this play that Michael Weller wrote. Is he seeking to make you reflect on the current situation in Alaska, where we've seen Bill Allen testifying against all these people that he bribed?
Well, he hasn't said outright that he's steering us towards that, but I mean, I've talked about it with him, and I definitely saw from the onset the parallels and the universality of how Soapy is like the best and worst in us. And he, at his high times, he, you know, built churches in Skagway and Creed and Colorado and Denver. And he was known as a man who would never turn a person away who was in need, and would, you know, would, if it, even the people that he stole from, he would turn right back around and give them money to help them out. And it's just like, it's amazing the benevolence that he had.
So how do you seek to play that?
Well, I mean, you have to set up a certain value set for this person and what he believes is right. And so you just follow through on that. From his mind, the way he did business was a good way to go.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, as far as Soapy Smith is concerned, you're always going to have prostitution. You're always going to have gambling. You're always going to have these things. So why not use them to your benefit? You know, they're always going to be there. People are always going to want to do them. So they shouldn't necessarily be outlawed. So,
yeah.
Well, I think he also considered himself something of a teacher, didn't he? I mean,
mm-hmm.
He used to have a sign above his door that said "Caveat Emptor,"
mm-hmm.
and in his own mind, was trying to teach people not to be made fools of by people like him.
So he was almost giving people character lessons. I'm reminded
mm-hmm.
of
yes.
the you know, P.T. Barnum's "This Way to the Egress" sign. You know,
that's right.
Right. Uh-huh. Yes. Out of his trial that he had in Denver, it came up that whole fact is he had actually made statements saying that, you know, well, if people come in my club, they see my sign, let the buyer beware, and they, you know, if they learn that, they learn a valuable lesson, and that's what I do. I'm, you know, an educator. I didn't help people understand that, you know, If they make that lesson in my club, they're hopefully never going to have to need that lesson again.
I think that must be a total hoot to play that character.
Oh, it is. It's a ton of fun. I mean, he is such a fascinating person. So
yeah, and with his oratorical gift,
mm-hmm.
you know, which was really more highly valued, I think, back then than it is now. I mean, sure, you can go into talk radio or whatever, but I mean, people used to go out to hear these inspiring lectures, you know, and for them to be so afraid, they didn't want to let him in the meeting because he would sway mm-hmm. the meeting. I mean, that's
yeah.
powerful.
Because that's what you had back then. You didn't have TV to watch. You didn't have all these other things. I mean, that's what theater was comprised of. That's what, you know, when you go out and saw those things, it was about seeing a person talk and hearing how they could move you. And yeah, you didn't have these other sources that we have nowadays to go to.
Yeah. Michael Weller, would your the Soapy Smith that you wrote about be the kind that would say what Jeff Smith quoted him as saying about what I'm doing is no worse than, you know, I'd rather be doing it than most politicians?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's very much in character with who I wrote, yeah. I mean, he's a charmer, and he's smart, and he does have a point. I mean, he's no more corrupt than the shopkeepers in the town, really. And he's doing a lot more good when he does good. So, you know, he has a lot of arguments on his side. He's a complicated man.
We're talking with Michael Weller, the author of The Ballad of Soapy Smith. We'll be coming to Alaska to watch it played by Cyrano's. Michael, Dick didn't want me to tell you, but I feel like I really have to. They had to cut some characters out of the play to get it on the stage there at Cyrano's.
Oh, they didn't have those 36 actors around.
There's not space in there to fit 36 actors.
You haven't seen the backstage yet.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Well, I hope that I hope the cuts were judicious.
I'm picturing the play. You know, so I haven't read the play and I haven't seen the play. It is hard for me to read plays, and I'd much rather see it. I'm looking forward to seeing this one that is really – I'm getting a feeling you really tried to steep it in its era, even though you don't really consider yourself an historical writer, you know, by trade.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, I tried to get a sound that sounded like it would convince an audience this was how they talked back then and so on. I didn't want to make it self-conscious, you know. I didn't want people to go, oh, that's like, you know, that's phony. I just wanted to – it's kind of like watching an old Western. There's just a way – they talk, and it becomes, you get used to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have trouble with the turns of phrase, Eric?
Oh, not at all. I mean, he writes very well for not only the era, but for dialects, and there's like a variety of different dialects within the script, because Skagway was a hodgepodge of different people from different places.
Yeah.
And Soapy himself is actually from Georgia, and the way I'm playing is that he does retain a hint of that accent.
Mm-hmm.
And that once you're born into it and you're raised there, and then also in Texas for, you know, the first 16 some years of your life, that accent's going to be with you for the rest of your life. So
Yeah, and the era was still like the post Civil War, post Reconstruction, mm-hmm. with the people that were, you know, wistful about their aristocratic backgrounds that they'd lost and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he told a story, I think, that he'd had a mansion in the plantation in the South, and it had been burned by the Union Army. He told stories to that effect. You know, he put on, and it either was that he was putting on airs and graces, or that something like that really happened. No, but nobody knows for sure, you know.
Jeff Smith, you have any idea?
Jeff, have you found it? Well, yeah. Have you found out something about that?
Yeah, in fact, last year I did visit the original homestead in Georgia, but he was good at telling stories like that if it fit what he was talking about. For instance, he did even say at one time that he was an officer during the Civil War, but he was
right.
only a child. He was born right,
right.
at the beginning
mm-hmm.
of it.
Yeah. That might have been a bit of an exaggeration.
Yeah, right.
Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. We're talking about myth and reality of Soapy Smith and what we can learn from Soapy Smith in these difficult political times. It's a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, and you can also send us an email at talk@APRN.org as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
It's the Ballad of Soapy Smith will be performed in Anchorage, and the playwright will be coming up as part of that, and also a descendant of Soapy Smith, Jeff Smith. And we have them all with us, including the actor who is playing Soapy. And let's go to Rob, who joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Rob.
Well, thank you very much. Happy to be here. I just wanted to mention that recently there was a movie called The Assassination of Jesse James. Brad Pitt played the title role. That was based on a book by a man named Hansen called The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford.
Right.
A good deal of it is from Robert Ford's point of view. I thought it was a really well-written book. I happened to read it when I was in Bush, Alaska, and I was kind of laid up with a bad back, and it was just the perfect antidote. And the reason I'm calling in is because in the book, Soapy Smith is a character, and he instigates the murder of Robert Ford. I guess I'm giving away the end of that book, but Soapy Smith is a character in there, and he was in Creed, Colorado. Whether or not factually the book is on or not, it was just a very interesting thing to throw in there, and it definitely ties in with myth versus reality and the old principle of when the legend is interrupted by the facts, print the legend.
Yeah. Rob, thank you. Thanks for your call.
Great. I just love cons and conmanship and the whole theory behind it. Thank you much.
All right. Yeah, one thing that I think about when it comes to the gold rush is the whole manifest destiny and frontier mentality that Alaska is kind of like where manifest destiny didn't have any place left to go when it got here. This is sort of the end of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it arrives in a boom, really, that is very similar to all what was happening all through the American West, wouldn't you say? I mean, isn't that the feeling you sought to portray here, Michael?
Yeah, really. I mean, absolutely. I mean, once the law arrives, once it's no longer, a sort of non-state territory, to a great extent, all of that potential is going to be taken away. So this is the last gasp of a certain Wild West, you know, unmediated capitalism.
We had an email from Ray Metcalf said, "Hey, did Soapy Smith have a charm school? I think I know a few people who may have attended." Thank you, Ray. And Richard from Anchorage joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Richard.
Well, thanks. I wanted to speak about a particular character in the play. Actually, I'm in the play, and that is Tagish Sam. And I'm curious about him because he's the only native Alaskan that shows up in the play, but at the same time, his it seems his cadence, his vocal cadence, represents more of a Navajo or a New Mexico type of Indian rather than the Athabascans that I'm aware of in Southeast and the Tlingit people and what have you.
Well, so you go, well, you've got the playwright on here. Let's see how he answers to that.
Well, I didn't, you know, I was making it up. I mean, I've never been to Alaska, so it's all bullshit, you know.
All right.
You know, so hopefully you just have to make some kind of sense of it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, I can guarantee you that my Tlingit friends who come see the play will sit there and go, that's not the way we talk.
Yeah, well, I have to, you know, apologies to them. You know, it's odd. When I wrote this play, I had no idea Sophie Smith was such a big deal in Alaska. And I really didn't know anybody would give a damn except the theater audience for this new theater. And since then, I've discovered there are a lot of people who know a great deal about this. And, you know, I just have to say I'm afraid I got a lot of it wrong.
That's something that always flows through my mind.
It's okay. Well, I'm looking forward to meeting you in person, and looking forward to having you watch us, because both Patrick and Eric do a fine job. So
great. I'm looking forward myself.
That was Richard Benavides, by the way. He plays several of the characters, including Red Gibbs and Tagus Sam. So.
Oh, great. Okay, yeah. Very good. Wow.
Well, thank you, Richard. And that's not the first time you played multiple characters, I happen to know.
Well, yeah, what I was about to say there is actually one thing that has been coming to my mind is how the general public, who is very fascinated by the Sophie story, is going to deal with how Michael does change some of the actual facts. But within the story, it works, and you know, it makes for a brilliant story. It's going to be interesting to see how the public that's very much married, like if as a book translates to a movie, you have how those things change slightly.
So, yeah, right.
Well, I mean,
you know, the number one thing is you have to make a good story for people,
and it is. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it very much, and if I enjoyed it, then I think everyone else will, too.
Yeah, that's Jeff Smith, a descendant. So how long is this book going to be that you put all these years of research into?
Well, I'm looking at about 600 pages, most of it unpublished material, because Soapy did consider himself a businessman, and he saved probably 90% or more of his letters and documents, and he wrote a lot. So, you know, I have over 150, and family members all around the country have other items, letters and documents. So almost any era of Soapy's life, any important event that you could bring up, I have an original document for.
Wow. So this is going to be for historians, this is going to be a substantial addition to the whole body of Alaska history literature.
Not only Alaska, but Colorado and Western history as well. There were a lot of members in his gang that no one knows about who were actually infamous in their own light.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in the Wyatt Earp saga, you have people like Texas Jack Vermilion, Big Ed Burns, and these were all became members of Soapy's gang. So it was kind of like an Old West Al Capone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, just bringing those colorful names up, you know, I know a bunch of people who buy those Wild West magazines they used to put out and just steep themselves in studying this history of what really happened at the OK Corral or whatever, and I can just imagine what a good time they're having listening to this show and looking forward to the publication of your book. Do you have a title yet, Jeff?
Yes, I do. Alias Soapy Smith, The Life and Death of a Scoundrel.
All right. Well, you put it right up front then. Let's go to Greg in Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Greg.
Yeah. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
I just came back from Whitehorse yesterday. I've been living there on and off quite a bit for the last 4 years, and, you know, just came back to Alaska to attend a friend's wedding. And Soapy Smith, like, figures really large in the view of Alaska by Yukoners. And maybe it's because, you know, Skagway is so close. I mean, it's like when I'm living in Trapper Creek, it's farther to salt water when, you know, for me there than it is when I'm in Whitehorse, right?
Good point.
And like twice in a 1 week period in the last couple of weeks, people have referenced Sophie Smith to me, knowing I'm an Alaskan, in regards to our current political situation and the kind of people that we have in our state legislature, and of course our illustrious senator.
How could they resist?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like that's what they kind of know. The gold rush thing is sort of what they know about Alaska history more than anything else, because of course it directly impacted them.
Yeah, and you know,
their development.
And then there's that whole sort of distanced Canadian sense of humor that this is just the sort of thing that they would get a greatest kick out of.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's really interesting. I had not thought about you know, as an Alaskan passing through Canada and having people being tagged with Sophie Smith after all these years.
Yeah, it's sort of like what they remember, and it's in their museum too. I just went through the McBride Museum for the first time in quite, you know, like since the 70s, the last time I'd probably gone in that museum, and you know, he's referenced there, and it's, you know, it's a direct link to their history, because, you know, the gold rush is the history of Whitehorse, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, whereas in Alaska, I mean, you know, the gold rush is big. I grew up in Wasilla, and the gold rush, of course, created it. You know, Kinnick moved, you know, to Wasilla when the railroad was built. But still, in Alaska, we're talking about a 40-year period, you know, maybe 1880s to 1920s being the gold rush with different strikes, and it's, you know, doesn't figure as large in our history, I think, as some other things do.
Right. In a way, it still hasn't left the Yukon.
Right, right. Yeah, they've got large-scale mining going on.
Greg, thank you so much for your call.
Hey, thank you very much.
And Jeff Smith, I want to thank you for being with us. You really added to this this program about your ancestor, Sophie Smith, and I wish you the best with your book.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
Michael Weller, it was an honor to talk with you, the author of The Ballad of Sophie Smith, and I hope you have a good time when you're here in Alaska.
Thanks a lot. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. And Eric Hayden, break a leg.
Thank you.
How is it going? You got opening coming up pretty soon. You got your lines down?
I'm feeling pretty good about where I'm at. I'm hoping these two guys we're talking to today really like what I'm doing. So,
all right. Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
All right. Well, it's Talk of Alaska. Gooseberry Peter on the controls. Kristen Spock on the phones. No, it's Lynn Anderson today. And our vice president of media production is Duncan Moon. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. If you're an artist who expresses yourself creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance, you may be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an Individual Artist Awards grant. You can learn more online at rasmussen.org. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.